From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Hurricane Florence barreled into the Cape Fear region less than 1 month ago. Now the remnants of Michael are bringing more wind, rain, and possible flooding to southeastern North Carolina. A new Elon University poll just out this morning finds that in preparation for Hurricane Florence, most people stockpiled bottled water, food, extra flashlights, and gasoline. And people were generally pretty satisfied with how well they prepared. As for whether North Carolinians feel as though they're getting the help they need, 59% say they are. But a quarter of those polled say they are not. The Elon poll also found strong support for restricting real estate development in flood-prone areas and for increasing environmental regulations for coal ash ponds. 62% support incorporating findings from climate change scientists into local government planning. As people consider the increasing threat of climate change just after the release of the United Nations Climate Change Report, families, small businesses, nonprofits, and especially those who spend their time helping others are facing a long road to recovery. The Salvation Army Cape Fear, for example, saw torrential rains and wind from Florence collapse the ceiling of its homeless shelter and kitchen on 3rd Street in downtown Wilmington. Domestic Violence Shelter and Services had to move people out of its facility and now must deal with the cost of housing people elsewhere, as well as rebuilding. An animal hospital in Southport lost its first floor and surgery center and has yet to reopen. The blockade runner at Wrightsville Beach just announced a months-long closure to deal with Florence damage. Again, these are examples, in no way illustrating the scope of the damage. And of course, families are displaced. Before the storm was even gone, Governor Roy Cooper was pointing out the impending shortage of affordable housing in the state. Today, we're going to sort out where we are, where the resources are, and what people in this region are finding to be the most challenging issues. With us today, Chris Coudray. He is the manager of New Hanover County. Chris Coudray, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Amanda Hutchison is Public Information Officer for Brunswick County, and because she is on duty during Michael today, which is impacting us during this live Thursday discussion, she joins us for this first segment via Skype. Amanda Hutchison, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us today, Daryl Habish, External Affairs Officer for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. He joins us by phone as he is also sheltering in place as the remnants of Michael blow through the region today. Daryl Habish, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And we're inviting you to join the discussion. Are you still getting your affairs in order after Florence? Have you had to move out of your home? What are the pieces of the puzzle that you're trying to figure out now? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Chris Coudray, as we think about the remnants of Michael blowing through today and the devastation that happened in Florida, what do we now expect to see here in the Cape Fear region?
Well, let me say from New Hanover County's perspective, we still have a state of emergency that was declared for Hurricane Florence. We haven't rescinded that. There's still lots of work from that storm that needs to be done. But most specifically to Michael, our Emergency Operations Center is activated again. It's a limited activation, which means that we have key folks from our emergency management office, the county manager's office, some of our emergency support functions, and certainly communications. And we're going to be staffing that office at least for the next 2 days completely uninterrupted. We don't relish what's happening in the state, but at least there's some good fortune to us in that the track's a bit further west than had originally been expected. So a little bit less rain and a little bit less wind than we were talking about yesterday. Again, this is not good for anybody, especially our folks and our family and our friends in the eastern or central part of the state. But there's a little bit of reprieve for us from what this storm could have been just 24 hours ago.
Amanda Hutchison of Brunswick County, we know you've been sending out updates regularly about where people can get food and water at this point. After Florence, what kind of needs are you seeing in Brunswick County at this point?
We still have some citizens who are going to these distribution points, to get food, to get supplies. We also have a lot of residents trying to still deal with cleaning up and making repairs. One of the things we've been encouraging this week leading up to Hurricane Michael was for citizens to take steps to secure their buildings, especially buildings that sustained some level of damage during Florence that has not been fully repaired. Things like roofs that still have tarps on them, siding damage that hasn't been fully repaired, that type of thing. And a lot of that work is ongoing, and it's unfortunately a lot of it is not complete now as we're experiencing Michael coming in.
And Amanda, you announced yesterday that the Brunswick County was opening a shelter this morning, this Thursday morning. Is the shelter open now, and how many people are in there?
It is, and I believe we have about 9 people there.
And is this a pet-friendly shelter?
It is, yes.
Daryl Habish, you know, so many people weren't really prepared for another storm to come up so quickly. But in this storm and in any storm, what's the first step people really need to take once the storm has blown out of here and they're ready to go home and evaluate the damage? What do they do next?
You know, they need to pay attention to all of your local authorities who are putting out that information to make sure that it's safe to get back to your home or your business. That's really the key to it, is keeping aware of what the situation is out there, contacting your insurance agent and making an insurance claim. Once you get in back to your home and you can ascertain the damage, your first line of defense is your insurance. Now, hopefully you have National Flood Insurance policy. That is paramount. I mean, it rains here, it gets wet. Everybody should have an NFIP policy.
Daryl, we're hearing, though, so many people don't get those flood insurance policies because they don't live in a flood zone.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you advise people along those lines?
I would advise that everybody get it. Go to disasterassistance.gov, take a look at it. It's open to all citizens who own property, as well as, I believe, renters for NFIP insurance. Just because you're not in a designated flood zone or a floodplain, believe me, those will change every year or every few years as these maps are updated. If you're not in a flood zone today, consider yourself lucky because your premiums will be less. Once you're designated as a floodplain, your risk is higher. So there's really no time to wait. If you're not required to get that insurance, by all means, get it anyway. We don't require anyone, unless you have a federally backed mortgage, to participate in the flood insurance program. So again, if it's not required, you should, by all means, find out and pay a lower premium, but be covered.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with a spokesman from FEMA and a couple of local county officials about resources that are available after Florence and, of course, today as we're watching the remnants of Michael blow through. Maria from Delco, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Do you have a question for our guests?
Yes. So my problem is with the disaster unemployment. It's just not working. None of it is working at all, and most of the people I know, they've not been successful in being able to apply for it, and I know some people have even given up trying.
Okay. Maria, let's let Amanda take this. Amanda, can you hear us?
I can hear you, yes.
Would you say to Maria?
Are you asking about the disaster unemployment assistance from the NC Division of Employment Security?
I think that's a good assumption. Maria's gone because we can't.
Okay.
Yeah. But go ahead. What should Maria do? She says the website isn't working and they're not taking calls or emails.
That's a program that's run through the state. I have not heard any other information other than the email address that we have for that organization, which is des.dua@nccommerce.com, as well as their website and the 1-866 phone number. which is 1-866-795-8877. Those are probably the numbers that she's already tried. I do have a note that the phone number is answered between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. I don't know if that's part of the concern with it not getting answered if it's after 5 p.m.
Okay. Chris Coudray, New Hanover County.
You know, Rachel, I don't want to go too far into territory that I'm not an expert on, but I think the caller could have also been referencing disaster unemployment that has been made part of this federal declaration. And to our friends in Brunswick County, she's right. The first step to actually be qualified for the federal disaster unemployment is to be denied by the state for unemployment claims before you can be moved on to federal assistance. And so that may be where part of the complication and the complexity is found. And that's something that we're all trying to work really well on, is communicating what is the path, the clear and predictable path for our folks to receive the benefits that they are entitled to or are eligible for. So if the caller was trying to secure federal disaster unemployment first, that's probably the wrong path to go. Start with the local or the state office first, let them decline that benefit, and then be made available for or eligible for the federal benefit.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're exploring the needs created after Florence, possibly exacerbated by Michael. We have yet to see that. Three authorities are answering your questions on this Thursday. And actually, we have to say goodbye to Amanda Hutchison now from Brunswick County. Thanks so much for being with us today, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And when we come back from this break, we'll hear from some more listeners. You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. After Hurricane Florence pushed slews of North Carolinians out of their homes, caused businesses and nonprofits to shutter, we're taking a look at some of the most common issues and questions that are facing folks in this community. Here to answer as many questions as possible, Daryl Habish. He's spokesperson for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and Chris Coudray, manager of New Hanover County. You can ask your own question on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Chris Coudray, I just want to go back for a minute to Maria's question about how to pursue disaster unemployment relief benefits for that. You were making it clear that there's one path people need to go down first, get rejected from that before they pursue the next path. Can you tell us anything about the kinds of workers that might be eligible for federal versus state?
You know, Rachel, I'm not in a really good position to speak what the eligibility criteria would be for state unemployment versus this supplemental federal disaster unemployment. It's just as we've been navigating this, what's become clear to us is that the first step to secure the federal benefit is to make sure that you're not eligible for unemployment through the state of North Carolina. And in the case that it is a disaster-related dislocation from work, I have to make the assumption those are the kinds of criteria that the state would say, okay, this is not a traditional view of unemployment, and so there is an alternative program made available via the federal government. So the best education that we've had most recently, and again, we're working to try and message this and help people navigate the process, is pursue unemployment through the traditional route first before you pursue it through the federal government. And a lot of the communication that you've seen out there in recent days has been about, I believe, federal disaster unemployment in contacting the national hotline that you're seeing posted by FEMA. you ultimately end up there, and everybody who has a need should go and register and make their needs known to FEMA.
And when we think about people who have disaster-related job needs, are we talking about people who might work in restaurants or retail situations where, you know, the businesses had to close during the storm and maybe couldn't even reopen right away? Hourly workers, folks who don't get a salary, and if they don't work, they don't get paid?
I would like to believe that is the very intention and the kind of employee and professional that this benefit is intended to help bridge to being able to return to work or perhaps lost income while they were out of work. It doesn't necessarily mean that a job has been lost permanently. To your very point, it could be for the period of time that they were not able to work because the business was closed.
We have a question from Catherine. She writes, why are there no temporary shelters provided by FEMA? She says, I've helped 7 families who were given a week's notice to be forced out of the Glen and are still living in short-term housing while we wait for leases. A pregnant woman is sleeping on the floor. People and families living in the Cross Creek neighborhood have received no assistance with temporary shelter or hot meals, even though they experienced severe flooding into all the homes in that subdivision. And she goes on. It's a very long email. But Daryl Habish, let's start with you. Mm-hmm. Why no temporary shelters provided by FEMA?
Well, we provide options for sheltering. That's really our role in this, is that when we arrive, we assist the local and the state municipalities in providing shelter. No one should be sleeping in their cars. If you have received an evacuation notice, for instance, from these communities or these apartment complexes, that they are showing you the door, so to speak. We have people there. We have dispatched teams to every one of those apartment complexes, disaster survivor assistance teams, to help people register on the spot. And in fact, if my memory serves, I believe out of the almost 400 households that have been displaced just in those apartments, almost half of them are taking advantage of the transitional sheltering allowance, which is a program that we pay hotels directly for those rooms. And sometimes it's not going to be close to where you live. As the hotels fill up, you may have to commute further and further away. That's unfortunate, but that's a function of what the housing stock is here. Other options are rental assistance, where we give that applicant a grant for them to find their own hotel or apartment or short-term lease.
And how do people go about getting this kind of assistance from FEMA?
Well, they need to, three different ways, actually. They need to go online to disasterassistance.gov, or they can call 800-621-3362. Or they can stop in at a number of the disaster recovery centers that are open up throughout North Carolina, and they can actually stop in and register there. People should be prepared to have all of their information, as if they're making an insurance claim, proof of residency, their Social Security information, their financial institution information. And some folks who receive a determination letter that says, you know what, you're not eligible for this transitional sheltering program. It's because we know through the information you've provided that you receive 2 weeks or 4 weeks of sheltering assistance from your insurance company first. We can't duplicate that by law, so you have to use those insurance benefits first.
Okay, so checking with the insurance company first. Chris, were you about to jump in?
I'd like to, and I believe the neighborhood referenced in the email is probably in Brunswick County, and I don't want to speak for Brunswick. I can speak at the global view in terms of the question about what people say, FEMA trailers, where are they? That is part of a direct housing program that the state and federal government have authorized. The state housing strategy was only approved by FEMA and the state on September the 25th. Once that approval happened, the assessment of where these benefits would be made available started. And so Brunswick and Pender have already been told they're going to receive direct housing. New Hanover County was just informally told yesterday that that's a benefit. And so the idea of recreational vehicles and mobile homes that people have seen after prior big events is certainly an option and a benefit that's likely going to appear. But that's usually many weeks after the storm passes. And so you're going to see that begin to be stood up. In fact, New Hanover County is making some changes to allow that to happen once those units come to our community. But more specifically to what Daryl was referencing in transitional shelter, that is where folks hopefully are going to be approved for the federal benefit, where they can take short-term residency in an apartment complex if they can find one, take place in hotel or motel, take sheltering there, or in other units that are short-term housing in nature. The challenge that we're having between Brunswick and New Hanover County, there are only 6 hotels total that have agreed to take the TSA benefit. FEMA will make that payment directly to the hotel, to the motel. It's a direct line of cash. But there's only 6 hotels, 3 in Brunswick, 3 in New Hanover, that have agreed. And so part of what we're trying to work with the chamber, at least the Greater Wilmington Chamber, is get the hotel motel industry to be more aware of that benefit and agree to accept it so that we can put more folks who can get this benefit for up to 170 days into shelter until RVs or other mobile homes are identified as necessary and are stood up. So I know that was a long-winded response, but I was trying to give the perspective of why no shelter or why no trailers today. It doesn't mean they're not coming. They are. But what the short-term strategy is, and that we need the hotel motel community to agree to accept the benefit.
You're listening to Coastline. So many people in North Carolina had just started on their road to recovery after Hurricane Florence, and now remnants from Michael are blowing through, putting that on hold for at least a day. We have yet to see what the impacts from Michael will be, but we have a couple of officials with us today to answer your questions about post-storm resources. Chris Coudray is the manager of New Hanover County, and Daryl Habish is a PIO for FEMA. You can ask your own question on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Ellery from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question.
Sure. What's your question, Ellery?
So I have been displaced for the past 4 weeks due to flooding that made my house that I had rented for about 3 years completely uninhabitable. And my roommates and I won't be able to move back in there. So we have about 3 or 4 more weeks before we can move into a new place. And my question is, being low income because I'm a student and needing all of the help that I can get, how much longer will disaster relief supplies be readily available?
Good question. Daryl?
Yeah, I'll take that. The question is, how much longer will it be available?
Disaster resources, yeah.
Oh, they, you know what? They will be here as long as needed. As of right now, stay in touch with FEMA and work that disaster recovery plan, which sounds like you're doing a good job of. You know that you need 3 more weeks or even 4 more weeks of assistance before you can get into that more appropriate long-term residence or lease. So stay in touch with us, and we can assist you. As long as that need is there for your sheltering, you can participate in the TSA program, the temporary sheltering program. That's what it's there for. So the long-term solutions are really what we would like to work with you on. Does that help?
Ellery, is that helpful?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you so much for that question. You know, we're hearing all these stories about people who are getting forced out of apartment buildings, and there are a lot of questions that have come up around that, because certainly it's understandable if a building is condemned and it's not a safe place to live and it needs remediation before people can safely live there. That's one thing. But Chris Coudray of New Hanover County, that's not what's happening everywhere.
That's exactly correct. Most every, well, let me say, to my knowledge, every apartment complex or individual unit where someone has been told it is no longer safe for you to live here, those are all decisions that have been made and informed by the property management company or the individual owner of the property. Neither the city of Wilmington nor New Hanover County have condemned, in the traditional sense, any housing in our community. It has not been our intent to displace people from this storm. So where apartment complexes and other individual units where those residents are being told you have to leave, those property owners are exercising their right to terminate leases based upon what they view as the public health and safety risk to their tenants. Those are not public decisions that are made by the health department or building code officials.
But then if you're looking at a situation where there are a number of apartment buildings in a complex and there is one building that wasn't harmed at all and that doesn't require any remediation, does that apartment building owner have the right to say you need to be out in 4 days? Or is that, I mean, and breaking the lease?
So, I mean,
is it okay for a person to say, actually, you can't legally evict me and I'm not moving?
I don't think that I can offer a thoughtful response on that. What I can say, based on the information shared with us, I can confirm there are some circumstances where there are there's been decisions to perhaps terminate the leases on all properties, whether each property was impacted by the storm or not. So there have been decisions made where apartment complexes are going to close, but completely, but not every complex itself or every apartment was affected significantly. I can only assume that property management firms and the way leases are written allow that to happen. But again, those are decisions that have been made by property management firms and owners. Those are not decisions that have been made by your local or state government.
And so in cases where there's a question about whether the property owner has the legal right to break the lease, it might be a good idea for that person to seek legal counsel?
Well, I would suggest that, again, part of registering with FEMA is also accessing a legal service. And I'm sure Daryl could speak to that with much more authority than I, but there is legal services that are made available through the overall individual assistance program that's sponsored by FEMA and the federal government. Whether or not that's a question that those paralegals or lawyers can help you navigate, I don't know. But certainly expressing that as a need or an interest through the registration process strikes me as appropriate.
Well, Daryl, yeah, can you speak to this?
Yeah, I was going to say it's great information, Chris, and it's absolutely correct. There is free legal assistance available. So you can call that number, the 800-621-3362 number, and ask for legal assistance in the North Carolina disaster. And that's provided, I believe, by the North Carolina Bar Association. And it's specifically for these types of questions. You know, what is the responsibility, my responsibility to a landlord, and vice versa? And they can help you to navigate that. And again, this is a free service for you.
Daryl, is this something that is pretty common after devastating storms? I mean, because we've heard allegations. We can't say that this is the case. But we've heard people say, you know, a property owner just wants to upgrade the property and be able to charge a higher rent when people move back in. And so it's a really good opportunity for them to just get everybody out and get this done. Is that a common pattern? And is this something that tenants really do need to be aware of and really seek legal help about?
Well, I believe that in your own personal situation, you need to consider all the options available. I can't speak to the reasons why a management company, a property management company, would seek to break leases. You know, they have their, it's a business, and that's what runs their objectives. From the other standpoint, if you are displaced by the act, by that action, you are affected, of course, by the hurricane, by the disaster. So in that case, you become eligible for the assistance that we can provide. And sometimes it might be a shelter. It might be a hotel. But somewhere, you know, we have assistance for you in that, working with the Red Cross, Salvation Army, and so forth. But by all means, speak to the legal assistance and protect yourself.
We also, another question from Catherine, who wrote into us at coastline@whqr.org. She asks, how does FEMA support a risk applicant who doesn't speak English?
We have multilingual people on the phone banks at the 800 number. When you go into a disaster recovery center, we also have people available that we can connect you via telephone to various translations and translators to help you through that. It's a very common situation. We don't want the inability or the short ability to speak English stop you from receiving the benefits that you may be entitled to.
You're listening to Coastline. After the recent United Nations report on climate change and then Florence and Michael less than a month apart, do you think we need to start incorporating climate change into local planning? What personal or business challenges are you facing after Florence? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org with your own question. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get that question in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. As the remnants of Hurricane Michael move through the Cape Fear region on this Thursday, we're taking a closer look at how people in this community view climate change, what questions are out there for those recovering from Florence, and whether issues of global warming will seriously impact the area. Answering your questions on this Thursday, Chris Coudray, manager of New Hanover County, and Daryl Habish, spokesperson for Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. You can reach us on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. This is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. Daryl Habish, and we just watched the lights flicker a little bit here, which may have had something to do with the remnants of Michael. And if that happens, we will go on generator power and go to low power. Daryl, how much of an issue is toxic mold for people in the aftermath of storms like Florence? How do people know if they can't see it, if it's a factor? Is it enough to just be able to smell it? How do you know if your home is safe to move back into?
You know, mold, it just takes hours, literally a day or 2 days to form, and it could be within your walls, it could be within the drywall. It's something that is extremely dangerous for folks to be around. You need to take a look at it. You need to really find out. If your home was wet, you're getting mold. There's no two ways around that. So that is a situation that you need to address, and especially with your county building managers and so forth there, and the state, there's all kinds of information for mold remediation, at least how to make a portion of your home safe to live in while you are rebuilding for the future. And we do have, if folks that are listening have their pen and paper, I've got a couple of phone numbers for the last segment that we talked about, the Disaster Legal Services. So if they need that, I have a phone number, and it's 833-242-3549. Call that number during the daytime, and you can discuss what legal options may be available to you.
And so these would be volunteer attorneys who can help people who, for example, might have gotten a notice from their apartment manager that they need to be out in a couple of days.
Correct. And that's not just the only situation, but, you know, it affects so many facets of your life. You know, the whole disaster unemployment assistance, that's a FEMA-funded but state-operated program. So by all means, you know, go to that Division of Employment Security website and talk to the state. And that's specific. Let's say your car was affected and destroyed, and you can't get to work and back. There's no public transportation. There's things like, well, you may be eligible. There's all kinds of different scenarios that are outside of the normal unemployment assistance.
Chris Coudray of New Hanover County, more than 23 million gallons of sewage spilled in Brunswick and New Hanover counties as a result of Florence. That's according to the Star News. And that includes a Carolina Beach spill that is North Carolina's fourth largest since the year 2000. Why does this happen? And what can the county do to prevent such spills?
I think as a whole, we all have to put a priority, whether it's our personal belongings, the things that our public sector owns, but we've got to put an emphasis on resiliency and everything that we do going forward, using Florence as a lesson learned. And it shouldn't take lesson after lesson to finally get it, but to put resiliency in building back smarter and stronger so that we can sustain and bounce back from the impacts of these storms. We live in a beautiful place, but with that beauty comes fragile areas. There are vulnerabilities that we face because we choose to live in a coastal environment and on the coastal margin. So we've got to all embrace the idea of resiliency and make it central to our personal planning, but certainly the infrastructure planning that the state and local government does. I think that's where the county can be most effective, is helping harness the value and the energy around what does resiliency mean and how do we make that a part of everything that we do.
And when we look at it from that point of view, this Elon University poll that was just published this morning is interesting. Look at the responses, found that overall 62% of the people who were polled, and these are registered voters in North Carolina, and it was pretty evenly split among Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliated voters. Overall, 62% of those polled felt that findings from climate change scientists should be incorporated into local government planning and ordinances. Now, when you drill down into those numbers a little bit more, you do find differences between Democrats and Republicans. Support for incorporating climate change science into planning stood at 76% among Democrats, 47% among Republicans. Chris Coudray, I know you're not a politician.
Mm-hmm.
You're a county
Thank
manager.
Thank you for recognizing that.
But you have
that.
To deal with this all the time. How, I mean, there's no dispute, really, in the scientific community that climate change is not only happening, but it's caused by human activity on the Earth. And the only thing that's going to change that is a different kind of human activity. It's up to humans to cut back on greenhouse gas emissions and do things about that. You talk about building resiliency into the plan. What about building climate change science into where New Hanover County might build or rebuild or declare areas that are flood zones and not buildable?
I think to your point, Rachel, what we have to do, and I will applaud New Hanover County as a governmental entity, and I don't say it selfishly because I work there. It's, I think, a true statement. We do our very best to use data to make decisions that are our decisions as staff to make, and certainly data to inform the recommendations that we recommend to the elected Board of Commissioners. So we're very data-focused, and we need to continue to embrace using data, and understand what control we do or don't have as a local government. It's largely around how you develop and use your land. And I think one thing, taking the 30,000-foot view, we want to make sure that we don't advance a set of policy recommendations that make this a less attractive place, to say, well, that you can't live safely, effectively, and cost-effectively on the coast.
But what if you can't in certain places that are now built upon? I mean, this is, you know, taking the politics out of climate change science. The body of work is there. The data is there. The scientific conclusions are there. But it's still somehow politicized.
So I think the best evidence of what the risk is because your property has flooded once does not in and of itself mean that it's an unsafe place to be. What I think we've got to focus on are the areas that have repetitive loss, and repetitive loss over how long. Certainly, there's been a lot of areas in our state, not just our community, but I would suggest more inland in eastern North Carolina, that have seen repetitive loss two and three times just since 1999 with Hurricane Floyd. So let's look at the areas that there's clearly a fact pattern where the repetitive loss is, and what are the things that we can do to make sure those communities remain strong and vibrant, but mitigate the long-term risk. And so that's the balance, is making sure that we're all healthy economically, culturally, socially, but do it in a way that we minimize risk to the best and strongest degree. And so that's where we have to spend a lot of time, I think, and we need to use Hurricane Florence as an opportunity to get really creative about what policy looks like about future development and redevelopment. Running from the water's edge is not the solution by itself. It may be in certain spaces the right thing, but it's much more complicated and requires a lot of creativity and imaginative policy making going forward to really effectively deal with the risks of living on coastal North Carolina, but certainly in the eastern third of the state.
During Hurricane Florence, state officials talked about the fact, I think it was Governor Roy Cooper who pointed out, that Hurricane Matthew, a 500-year flood event, happened in 2016. 2 years later, another 500-year flood event happened in Hurricane Florence. So clearly we're not talking about 500-year flood events, and those designations need to change.
No question. I think how we capture the risk, to put it in the idea of, you know, once every 100 years and once every 500 years, there's a 1% chance of this happening in any given year. That's what all those references mean. Doesn't mean a whole lot to those of us that are walking around on a daily basis. Just like I think there's probably going to be a real debate about why are we measuring hurricanes by category? You know, what's the difference between a high 3 and a low 4? Is that the right way to measure and capture the impacts of these storms? So there's a lot of things that as public officials we need to rethink, and how do we articulate risk in a way that makes a lot more sense and is more manageable.
Daryl Habish, spokesperson for FEMA. How does FEMA incorporate climate change science into whether you will provide money to a property owner to rebuild from a storm like Florence, or whether you'll say this isn't a good investment and rebuilding is not a good idea?
You know, exactly like Chris said so well, we look at repetitive losses. By directive, we don't focus on future events such as climate change, whether it's here today, whether it's shown statistically. What we say is, let's look at these areas and work with these counties and work with the state for those areas that are encountering and experiencing repetitive losses. We don't want, and neither do you want, the taxpayer dollars to continually rebuild a home or a business or areas that are just constantly under threat. So that's what we look at. And we look at areas that possibly we may have buyouts of individual homes. We may look at areas that we can work with the counties and the municipalities with on areas that can be turned into parks. of areas where the water needs to go. Now, the water is going to go somewhere, and if you're building in that area, it will repetitively get be damaged.
So when we look at a good example of this might be downtown Wilmington, and I realize this is a City of Wilmington question, but Chris Coudray, maybe you can weigh in. The project that's on the waterfront, River Place, a mixed-use parking residential retail space project, is anyone looking at that now that Water Street is seeing more days of nuisance flooding each year and saw intense flooding after Florence? And we know that particular area, along with Battleship Park, sees flooding whenever there's an event. Is anyone saying, maybe we don't build there?
So certainly I don't want to speak for the City of Wilmington or the East-West Partners doing that. But to the point, saying that we shouldn't build there is not necessarily the right response. It's how do we still take advantage of prime property that's going to create jobs, it's going to create good places for people to live, but how do we do that and mitigate the risk that we know today, but also the risk of the future? And so that's what I was suggesting earlier. These are complicated things that one strategy in and of itself doesn't solve the problem. We still have to think about the overall economic health of downtown Wilmington, about the health of the economy, the community as a whole.
So how do you build something like that? Understanding you're not speaking for the developer there or the City of Wilmington, what is an example of a way that you might build creatively so that you're not having to constantly rebuild or constantly mitigate damage?
I think there are things that you look at around using the natural environment to help manage storm water itself, the elevation that you can safely but fairly build at so that people have good, equitable access to what's going to be public and private spaces in there. I think stepping back in looking at the unincorporated county, not to dodge the question about River Place, but let's think about in the unincorporated county, we have a program that focuses on water quantity management. And I should be careful in what I say here because I should never be ahead of our elected officials, but the state taking an interest in water quantity management in unincorporated counties and other parts of the state is probably going forward just as important as the water quality focus. And most state stormwater rules are built around almost exclusively the quality of water. Absolutely important and critical. But to Daryl's point, the water's going to go somewhere. We want it to be as clean as possible, but how we manage the quantity and how we direct it, how we use the natural landscape, how we use the built environment to effectively manage that stormwater needs to be of state interest. It certainly is of interest to New Hanover County. Since Floyd in 1999, we've had a water quantity management program. Maybe one of the ways that we deal with inland flooding, 2 500-year events in 2 years, is looking at quantity management up our river basins.
Briefly, we're just about to wrap up, but lessons learned, Chris, from this storm?
And stop me when I should stop. I think as a whole, New Hanover County, I would like to believe our community knows and believes that we did a good job with response. That being said, a lot of things to be better at. Sheltering. Should we have pre-storm shelters or not? If we do, we've got to reinforce those. Auxiliary power at our critical facilities. We've got to rethink that strategy. EOC and 911 center resiliency. Donations and volunteer management. I could keep going. There's a lot of things we want to put more time and attention to.
And we are
going to
quantify that. We'll get that from you later. Thank you so much. That's this edition of Coastline. Daryl Habish, Chris Coudray, thanks both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
And
thanks
also to Amanda Hutchison of Brunswick County. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer Rachel Keith. Production manager Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.